Your time for rebuttal?
Yes.
3 minutes, thank you. Okay, you may proceed.
Thank you, Your Honor. Good afternoon, Your Honors. May it please the Court, my name is Matthew Johnson, and I represent Willie Marico and Willie Marico and Associates in this matter. Your Honors, the primary issue, what we're talking about here today, is NRS 239A, which is the Financial Privacy Act that the state of Nevada adopted from California, I believe, back in 1977. And
before you go down that path, is it correct that there is a protective order requiring the plaintiff to treat as confidential and not reveal to others the documents that the plaintiff got from the state bar pursuant to subpoena that you contend the state bar got pursuant in violation of 239A?
Yes. Currently, there is a protective order. We were able to get that from the Discovery Commissioner.
And if that is true, our review on an interlocutory appeal from an order denying a preliminary injunction is limited to an abuse of discretion, correct?
I think that for the denial of a preliminary injunction, you look at abuse of discretion, yes, Your Honor, but I also think that as a matter of interpretation of a statute, you look at de novo review.
And what is the extraordinary hardship that made the denial of the preliminary injunction, not a permanent one, but denial of a preliminary injunction, an abuse of discretion in this case, given the protective order?
Even though there is a protective order in place, NRS 239A-180 builds into it, well, 170 actually builds into it, the ability for the court to provide relief so that it can't be used anywhere. And in addition, 180 says that it can't be used in any hearing in any other matter. And that's
the protective order and confidentiality order. It can't be released to anyone else. I mean, down the road when you get to trial, you'll have to confront the 239, but this is an appeal from an order denying a preliminary injunction, and I'm just hard-pressed to understand why this case should be delayed. This ruling came down 18 months ago on an abuse of discretion standard from an appeal from an order denying a preliminary injunction.
Right, Your Honor. There are several matters that are very, very important to this issue involving these parties. One of them is whether this information that was obtained illegally contrary to 239A, one of those issues is can it be used in this case. There's a criminal proceeding as well that is ongoing. I think that was scheduled for trial in March and now is scheduled for trial, I believe, in June. And so it would also affect that case. So there is more than one action that it affects. And really the issue is
But wouldn't that be an issue for the criminal case?
It would be, but I think because of judicial economy, it makes a lot of sense for us to get an answer of whether or not the state bar, number one, whether it is an entity that is subject to 239A, something subject to that, and number two, if it is, whether the state bar ought to be responsible for abiding by the laws of this state as the entity that is in charge of all of us as attorneys, all of us as judges, should they abide by the law? And I think that that's a reason why it ought to be determined at this point in time.
In this case, though, with the parties that we actually have here, the order you were seeking was effectively to prevent them from using these documents in evidence, like effectively like a motion in limine?
Similar to a motion in limine, but we want to make sure that we have an order that says they cannot be used in any proceeding, as it states in NRS 239A-180.
Well, there also, and I'm not sure, and I would need to go back to the record, so I'm going to ask you,
yes.
Did they separately and independently subpoena bank records directly from the bank?
No, they did not.
They did not?
No.
Okay, that was my... Okay.
And that's the point. If they were to do that now, I think that would be... We made the argument of the lower court would be the fruit of the poisonous tree. So the real
but
issue...
Before we leave that subject,
yes.
Judge Bulla opined that the documents should have been produced or scheduled as either protected or irrelevant pursuant to the request for production that the plaintiffs promulgated, correct?
Correct, Your Honor, and we did. We produced 68 different checks, the front and the backs of 68 checks. We had hundreds of pages that we produced regarding releases signed by the mother in this case. So there, it's not that they weren't produced, but what happened is the subpoenas, there were eight different subpoenas. Those eight different subpoenas were issued from 2011 through 2015. And each of those subpoenas requested not only the records relating to this case, but they requested all of my client's personal bank records, his wife's personal bank records, all of the general account records as well as the trust account records, and thousands, I don't know if it's thousands, but at least hundreds of records pertaining to people who have nothing to do with this case and whose rights ought to be protected as well. It doesn't go just to my client's rights, but it goes to the rights of his clients as well.
But that would be an objection and a protective order. That's kind of outside this, correct?
That may be, yes, Your Honor. But again, all of those records were obtained in violation of 239A. And really the issue...
And the violation of 239A, as you frame it, is because the state bar subpoenaed those records from the bank without giving the advance notification to a client.
Exactly. Okay. Yes. Under 239A, any government entity is required by statute to do one of two things. They either have to obtain written consent saying they can take my records, or they have to issue a subpoena and provide that subpoena, and they can't serve the subpoena until 10 days has expired so that the opportunity for the person to object to the subpoena.
Mr. Johnson, that transitions to a question I had, and I'll let
yes.
you go with your argument. You know, that's presuming that the State Bar of Nevada is a government entity.
You're right.
Is it?
Yes.
Okay, tell us why.
Let me explain why. And I think that's the key issue, Your Honor. Is it a government entity or not? If it's not, then we can all go home. If it is, then what should happen is there should be an order entered that says these records were obtained in violation of 239A and they should not be used in any proceeding whatsoever. NRS 239A050 defines what a governmental entity is, and it says governmental agency means an officer, board, commission, department, division, bureau, district, or any other unit of government, including political subdivisions of the state. The state bar is an arm of this court. It's under the exclusive control of this court. The state bar was created by statute in January of 1928. Today, NRS 7.275 sets forth the state bar as being under the jurisdiction of this court, and it continued on the 1928 legislation, which created the state bar. Here, we have a disciplinary board of the state bar who issued these eight subpoenas from September 29, 2011 through August 15th of 2015 to Nevada State Bank eight different times, requesting Mr. Errico's personal, his general, and his trust account information, the front and back of each check, copies of all statements, etc. Not once did they notify Mr. Errico or his attorneys as required by 239A101A. There's several reasons why this court should determine that the state bar is a government entity. First, the court has already said that it is. In the In re Scott case that we cited in our briefs, the 1930 case, it was the first actual objection to the state bar being formed. At the time, there was a statute that said that a corporation basically could only be, was not supposed to be formed by through some extra process. And in the Scott case, an attorney was being disciplined, and he objected, saying the state bar didn't have the constitutional authority to even be formed. In that case, in discussing the state bar as a public corporation, noted, quote, the term municipal purposes in its broadest sense is used to include those public corporations, the purpose of whose creation is an instrumentality of the state. And then it goes on. In a recent case by this court, State versus State Bar, which is an unpublished decision, This is where there were two attorney generals who were not licensed in the state of Nevada. State Bar told them that they could go longer than the two-year period in the rule without being licensed as long as they worked for the AG's office. In that case, this court cited to Lewis versus the Supreme Court, which is a U.S. District Court case, noting that, quote, a state bar association is an integral part of the judicial process and acts as an agency of the state. In that case, in the Lewis case, which is a Section 1983 action brought against the state bar by a woman who had been licensed in California for 36 years, moved to Nevada. She had gone to a non-ABA accredited law school, wanted to be an attorney here. The state bar wouldn't allow her. In that case, she brought a lawsuit, and the federal court noted that a state bar association is an integral part of the judicial process, is entitled to immunity from suit under the Civil Rights Act as an agency of the state. Now, the respondents have cited in their brief that In re Keller...
None of those cases define or use the term in 239 that defines what a governmental agency is,
did it? No, they do not. That's true, Your Honor. They don't, but 239 itself says...
So whether the state bar was a governmental agency under the applicable statute that you're seeking an injunction under, really isn't decided in any of those cases, is it?
I think it's up to this court to decide that issue, Your Honor. I think this is really an issue of first impression.
Now, not then.
Correct. This is an issue of first impression. I would agree with that, Your Honor. The Keller case, it's interesting. Nevada's, the statute creating Nevada State Bar is word for word the statute taken from California. NRS 239 is nearly word for word the statute taken from California. The Supreme Court of California has ruled on this. And the Supreme Court of California in the Keller case, and this is the one the Supreme, before the California Supreme Court, not the Supreme Court of the United States, held that the State Bar of California is a governmental agency.
And then the U.S. Supreme Court reversed them.
They did, for questions of federal law. And the U.S.
First Amendment.
Right, because they were using bar dues, right, to pay for things that these lawyers didn't agree with.
Right.
But what's so interesting about that is the Supreme Court of the United States said, of course, the Supreme Court of California is the final authority on the governmental status of the State Bar of California for purposes of state law. And we're talking about state law. So you, each of you here, is the final authority of whether or not the State Bar is a governmental entity. I would argue that the State Bar is an agent. There is no question the State Bar is an agent of this court. They're responsible for administering the bar exam, for disciplinary actions. They can issue subpoenas. They can compel someone to appear at a disciplinary board. It is an agent of this court itself. It's governed by this court. It's under the exclusive control of this court. And it's a governmental agency. It's not like some private corporation where it's run by a board of directors and has nothing to do with the state. This has state powers. We can't practice law without being...
Mr. Johnson, I guess another question on it. And we'll give you a little extra time because we had a lot of questions for you. Judge Williams concluded he didn't have jurisdiction over the parties here as part of these proceedings in your request for an injunction. Did he have jurisdiction over the respondents in this case? Separate the State Bar of Nevada out.
Yes, we don't need the State Bar. The issue is whether the information obtained should be enjoined in our NRS 239A1A, and I believe that it can.
Okay.
With that, I'll
you want to serve about how many? You asked for how many minutes?
I asked for three.
We can get three, and we'll give an extra minute and a half to the respondents. Hang on one second. We'll get the time adjusted here, and then we'll get you started. It would be 16:30, I believe, then. Got it. Okay, we're all set now.
All right. Go ahead. Good afternoon, Chief Justices, and may it please the Court. My name is Garrett Chase, and along with Michael Vann, I represent the respondent in this appeal, Sandra Stahl, as the guardian of the estate for Wilford Richard James Bosserman. The primary issue in this appeal is the State Bar's fundamental ability to obtain the records of its own members. Your Honors, Respondent would request that this court affirm the district court's decision denying appellant's motion for injunctive relief for four important reasons. First and foremost, that the State Bar is not and has never been a government agency for the purposes of NRS 239A based on important characteristics that would distinguish it from other traditional government agencies. Second, even if the State Bar could be considered a government agency for the purposes of NRS 239A, the exemptive language under Section 70 of that statute would remove the State Bar from the prohibitions that appellant seeks to enforce. Third, the district court correctly concluded that it lacked jurisdiction to enjoin the State Bar's activities by virtue of Rule 65 and the undisputed fact that the State Bar was not a party to those proceedings. And fourth and finally, Supreme Court Rule 78.5 conclusively establishes that appellants actually consented to the disclosure of those documents to the State Bar. Additionally, Your Honors, there are two preliminary... There are two preliminary issues that warrant discussion for this appeal, the first being the standard of review. As Justice Pickering pointed out earlier, appellants suggest that the standard of review should be de novo based on questions of statutory interpretation. However, as this court stated in the State Office of Attorney General versus NOS Communications, where the district court has denied injunctive relief in order to reverse that decision, this court needs to find that the court either abused its discretion or relied on an erroneous legal standard or clearly erroneous findings of fact. Therefore, we would argue that based on the application of the appropriate standard of review, that appellants haven't even set forth a sufficient basis to reverse the district court's decision. Additionally, as Justice Pickering also pointed out, there are some considerations for mootness of this appeal. This court in Personhood, Nevada versus Bristol made clear that while a case may present a live controversy at its beginning, subsequent events can then render that case moot. Here, in May of 2018, which is roughly 6 months after the appeal was filed, the parties did enter into a stipulated protective order that would resolve and address any confidentiality concerns associated with those documents. Additionally, just a month and a half ago at the end of February, Discovery Commissioner Bula did state that directly subpoenaing the bank records from Nevada State Bank was appropriate and that respondents are actually in the process of doing that right now. Additionally, as Justice Pickering noted in the record and both before and after the appeal was filed, Discovery Commissioner Bula noted numerous times that these documents were the type of documents that should have already been disclosed and in fact ordered appellants to disclose these documents. As even appellant's counsel acknowledges, many if not all of these documents have then been produced by appellants, so the notion that they could suffer some extraordinary harm as a result of the denial of the injunction just is without merit.
Just a procedure, so just this, at the time Commissioner Bull's recommendations, they were approved by the district court, entered an order approving them?
That's correct. And essentially what she said was that if they wanted injunctive relief, they would have to take this issue to the district court, which they did, and then obviously it was denied, and now we're here today.
Well, but that was the point. Commissioner Bull's order didn't stop with counsel's eyes only on these documents. She said if you want to seek an injunction under 239A, go file it.
That's correct.
And they did.
Yep.
And that's the issue that's in front of us now.
That's exactly correct, Your Honor.
So they're seeking relief under this statute. If the statute applies to the State Bar, then you don't have a right to these documents if the basis under which you got them would be barred by the statute. That's their argument anyway.
That is their argument.
So, I mean, the thing that's been troublesome for me about this case is it appears as though they sought this injunctive relief as a separate means to get around Bulla's recommendation, but actually the Discovery Commissioner recognized that they could seek injunctive relief under the statute, and that's exactly what they did.
That's correct. And what,
so isn't the issue that's in front of this court, did the judge apply the correct legal standard in rejecting the injunction?
That is one of the issues before this court, and based on the language of NRS 239A and the analysis provided in the Keller versus State Bar opinion, we would say that the district court did correctly confirm that
the
State Bar.
So I want to clarify something that you said, because you were going through a list of reasons why the court should dismiss this appeal here, this appeal, but one of the things that you said was that there had been recent developments in which the other side had, I think you're implying, waived their right to be pursuing this.
That's correct, Your Honor. So the appellant's
Does the record show that?
The record shows some of those, but to some extent these developments happen after.
Well, you're talking about a recent discussion with the Discovery Commissioner. That's not in this record.
That's correct, Your Honor.
Well, let's stick with what's in the record.
Sure.
So what is in the record that shows, other than their waiver to produce documents to the State Bar, what's in this record that shows changes in the Discovery Commissioner's order and in the District Court's order since the injunction was denied?
In this record, there aren't necessarily changes that would render it moot, other than the fact that the stipulated protective order referenced by Discovery Commissioner Bula in the record was eventually entered into between the parties, like I said, in May of 2018. However, as I said, those are preliminary.
Well, that protective order, I mean, that stipulation isn't in this record either.
That's correct.
Let's stick with what's in the record.
With what's in the record, this court can still determine that the State Bar is not a government agency such that NRS 239A would even apply to it, based on the nature of the State Bar's creation and based on those factors in the Keller versus State Bar of California decision. Mm-hmm. Now, in that case, the United States Supreme Court addressed whether the State Bar of California could be considered a government agency in the context of a First Amendment challenge. Because they were addressing a similar ambiguity to what faces this court today, their analysis is instructive and should be applied to show that, in fact, the State Bar of Nevada doesn't appear to be a government agency. Specifically, the court in Keller pointed to three factors in concluding that the State Bar of California wasn't a government agency, and those are, one, the funding of the State Bar, two, the membership of the State Bar, and three, the authority and function of the State Bar. Now, in Keller, the court pointed out with that first factor, the funding of the State Bar, that the State Bar obtained its funding specifically from dues levied on its members and not from appropriations from the legislature. Looking at the second issue of membership, the United States Supreme Court noted that all of the members of the State Bar were California lawyers and that every lawyer licensed to practice in the state of California was required to be a member of the bar. Looking at the third factor, which was the authority and function of the State Bar of California, the court noted that the function was essentially advisory in nature and specifically distinguished between the State Bar and the California judicial branch by noting that things like admission, disbarment, and both writing and revising the code of conduct for attorneys were all things that were left to the state Supreme Court and weren't part of the authority of the State Bar. Based on those three factors, the United States Supreme Court concluded that the State Bar, in fact, was not a government agency. Now, looking at those, how those three factors play into this appeal, if we look again at the funding of the Nevada State Bar, we see per its annual report that it receives all of its funding from publications, sanctions, admission and licensing fees, and other programs, and importantly, it does not directly receive any state or federal funding. Looking at the second Keller factor, which is membership, again, every member of the State Bar of Nevada is an attorney licensed to practice in the state of Nevada, and every attorney licensed to practice is also required to be a member of the State Bar of Nevada. Importantly, the State Bar has no jurisdiction over any Nevada resident or citizen that has not intentionally and specifically sought to become a member of the bar. In looking at the second factor in the Keller case, the Supreme Court of the United States emphasized that members and officers are such not because they are citizens or voters, but by virtue of the fact that they are lawyers. And again, that's what the State Bar of Nevada has.
Isn't the State Bar run by Board of Governors, which are elected by the members of the State Bar itself? Is that the management part of it? I mean, I know Mr. Johnson argued it's the court. There are Supreme Court rules that, granted, that regulate the law practice, but it's not run by the court, though, isn't it, by the Board of Governors?
That's exactly right. And specifically looking at those rules that do create the State Bar, looking at Supreme Court Rule 76 in particular, right, it creates it as a public corporation. Now, that in and of itself doesn't definitively resolve the issue of whether or not it's a government agency or not. But it's important to note that the Supreme Court rules don't set it forth as an arm of the judiciary or as part of the judicial branch of the Nevada state government or even as an agent of the government, but as a separate public corporation. Looking at the authority and function, that Supreme Court rule is also instructive because it says that the State Bar shall govern the legal profession of Nevada, quote, subject to the approval of the Supreme Court. So at the end of the day, while the State Bar can make recommendations, say to disbar and order restitution, in cases of disciplinary actions, this court is the ultimate authority on those issues. Furthermore, even if, assuming arguendo that the state bar could be considered, right, the government agency for the purposes of NRS 239A, there's important specific language in there that would exempt the state bar from the prohibitions that appellants seek to enforce today. Specifically, Section 70 of NRS 239A exempts any governmental regulatory agency from the requirements of NRS and the prohibitions, rather, of NRS 239A. And what that section specifically quotes is, this chapter does not prohibit the examination by or disclosure to any governmental regulatory agency of financial records which relates solely to the exercise of its regulatory function if the agency is specifically authorized by law to examine, audit, or require reports of financial records. That language, taken in context with Supreme Court Rule 78.5, which requires state bar members to, quote, maintain and preserve the records of trust accounts and make such records available to the state bar for inspection upon request, show that the...
I want to talk about the consent issue for a moment. The consent is that as a condition of maintaining active membership in the state bar, they'll be deemed to have consented to reporting and production requirements. Right?
That's correct.
The consent then would be limited to what you consent to, which is if I want to be a member of the state bar, upon request, I must produce my financial records and make them available. The penalty being if I don't, then I can't maintain active membership in the state bar.
That's correct. Yep.
How does that give license to consent to essentially a Fourth Amendment search by the state bar council? And in any event, production then to third parties of this information. How would you have us read that consent, that limited consent, that broadly?
So that limited consent, we wouldn't have you read it that broadly, right? That consent does do exactly what you said, which is consent to the production of financial records.
It's not a consent to a subpoena to banks, then.
Not necessarily. However, the language of Supreme Court Rule 110 and 121 do provide that authority to the state bar. What Supreme Court Rule 110 says is that the state bar has the authority to subpoena third-party entities for those records. And in conjunction with Supreme Court Rule 121, it has the ability and the authority to do that confidentially if it serves the purposes of its investigation. So while 78.5 in a vacuum may not give it that right, on the whole, so the Supreme Court rules do give it the authority to, only for bar members, examine those records confidentially if they feel it's appropriate.
But that's separate than consent.
That's correct.
Okay, so they have some subpoena power to do those things confidentially.
That's correct. And I think it's worth noting that the district court did separate those issues. So it found that, one, that the state bar was not a government agency, right, under NRS 239A, and that therefore wasn't subject to those prohibitions, and then separately found that the appellants consented to producing their financial records in this case based on the language of Supreme Court Rule 78.5. And that brings me to the third finding of the district court, which was that it lacked jurisdiction to enjoin the state bar because there is no dispute that the state bar was never a party to those proceedings.
Well, didn't the district court still have jurisdiction over the respondents, though? Couldn't the court enter an injunction against the respondents, assuming it felt it was meritorious, and do it that way?
It absolutely could have, Your Honor. But if we look to the specific requests from appellant's counsel, we see that what they were requesting at the motion practice stage, during the hearing before the district court, and then even in their opening brief, they were requesting that the state bar be enjoined despite being a non-party. So if we look at page 755 of the record, that's their motion, which specifically requests the injunction. If we look at page 858 of the record, we see appellant's counsel explicitly requesting that the state bar be enjoined at the hearing before the district court. And if we even look at the appellant's opening brief, we see the first sentence of the statement of the case says, this case involves the state bar. It doesn't. It undisputedly doesn't. And in fact, the statement
so
of the case,
much more limited remedy is available, which is a protective order and a motion in limine in this case.
That's correct. That's correct, Your Honor. Because there's no dispute that the state bar wasn't a party, and there's no dispute.
Well, I'm not so sure that that is correct. The statute, barring the use of these records if they're obtained improvidently, mm-hmm. bars the use of the records. That means you don't get them either.
Th- That would be correct, again, assuming that the state bar was, one, a government agency within the meaning of the statute.
Well, I get all that, but let's assume for the moment that the statute applied. If we read the statute by its literal language, you're not entitled to these records, notwithstanding the Discovery Commissioner's order. The statute bars any use of these records if they were obtained without notice.
Well, assuming unless the exemption in Section 70 applies, or there's been a waiver pursuant to Section 90. So as stated previously, even if the bar was subject to those provisions.
So I'd like you to focus on the exemption again.
Sure.
Why do you think that applies here?
Because, in essence, if the state bar was a government agency, it yeah. would be a regulatory agency and specifically yeah. regulate the legal practice in Nevada.
Right.
Moreover, as I said with the Supreme Court rules, it would be a regulatory government agency that is specifically authorized to access those records. And so, again, even if the prohibitions applied generally to, or we concluded that the state bar was a government agency within the meaning of 239A, that exemption would protect. Right.
I apologize. Are you referring? So, this exemption you're talking about is under 239A.070.
Yep, and it's Section 6.
Thank you. So that talks about the government agency and its regulatory function. If the agency is specifically authorized by law to examine, audit, or require reports of financial records of financial institutions, how does that apply? I'm sorry, we're going over it. Chief, can you answer?
Of course. Briefly answer, and then I'll get it. So how that would apply, and I know that appellants have argued that of financial institutions means that the regulatory agency can only be one that is authorized to govern financial institutions, but based on the plain language of the statute, we feel it just doesn't support that reading, right? So what Section 70, subsection 6 says is that it doesn't prohibit the examination by disclosure to any governmental regulatory agency of financial records, right? It's not saying a governmental regulatory agency in charge of financial institutions. And so again, assuming that this court would find that State Bar is a government agency under 239A, then it would be a regulatory agency and it would not be subject to the prohibitions under that statute.
Because of the Supreme Court rules 110 and 121?
That's correct.
Thank you.
And so therefore, and for the foregoing reasons, we would respectfully request that this court affirm the district court's decision. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Mr. Johnson, you have 3 minutes. And
thank you, Your Honor. Going with your question, Justice Kadish, regarding the exemption, I think if you read the statute, it's very clear. And I noticed that the first time counsel read the statute, he skipped the last couple of words. And that clearly is talking about an agency that governs the banking industry. That's not talking about the state bar, which doesn't do that. And another reason, we put this in page 9 of our response brief, another reason why I think that that's incorrect, SCR 78.5 was enacted about 13 years after NRS 239A, so I don't think it has anything to do with it. I want to focus again just for a moment, if I could, on the not a government agency aspect. NRS 7.275, which is the statute we have in effect now regarding the state bar, says that it's a public corporation under the exclusive control and the exclusive jurisdiction of this court. In the case that we cited, I apologize. In the Scott case explained, quote, a public corporation, the purpose of whose creation is an instrumentality of the state. So the Scott case backs that up. There was also an argument by counsel saying that, look, this is not an arm of this court. Well, that's not what this court has said. In the Waters versus Barr case, the state bar, quote, exists as an arm of this court in the performance of our duty to regulate the attorneys of this state. There's no question it is an arm of the state. It's an agency of this state. It would act as an agent of the state.
Mr. Johnson, are you familiar with other cases in which this court has held that a public corporation is not a governmental agency?
I did not find one of those in doing my research, Your Honor.
Such as Walker River Irrigation District?
I did not. I am not familiar with that case, no, Your Honor.
Okay.
I apologize.
but I will read it.
Or Truckee River or Truckee Carson Irrigation District, or even some out-of-jurisdiction cases like Yuma LLC versus the Yuma County Airport Authority, where the courts recognize the distinction. I recognize it's not in the bar area, but holds that a public corporation is a separate entity from a county, city, and town, is not a subdivision of the state when it's formed as a public corporation.
I'm not familiar with that case law, Your Honor, but I am familiar with the case law here that says that a public corporation is an instrumentality of the state. I think that, you know, the city of Las Vegas, the city of Henderson, the city of Boulder City, et cetera, are all public corporations, and I think they're all governmental entities.
Okay, thank you, Mr. Donaldson. Both the counsel, thank you for your excellent argument and briefs, and the court will be in recess until 2:30 this afternoon.